Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Pundits had a lot to say about the UFC match held on the White House lawn for Donald Trump's birthday, but it turns out there was something insidious afoot. Here's more on a foiled terror plot from KCBS in the Bay Area.
Rich Frankel, former FBI special agent in charge and a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New York City. Rich, it's great to have you on this morning. This is just breaking overnight. What can you tell us about this situation?
Yeah, so from what it appears, this was a joint United States Secret Service FBI case. They got actually the lead from a local PD in Cincinnati who got a call from a parent reporting about the conversations of this quote-unquote crew. And the allegations are that they that there was conspiracy of anywhere from 5 to 23 people who wanted to take drones, laden them with explosives, and then have them fly over the UFC event and explode either above or in it, causing, injury, death, mayhem, they actually did do something overt in the case. I haven't heard about the drones themselves yet, but it appears that several of the individuals drove to Virginia and pre-positioned themselves for the event, for the UFC event, which is important because it shows that they did something overt. It wasn't just talking. If this is all accurate, that they actually did go forward. What we don't know is the age of these individuals, because it was a parent who called in. You could have teens, you could have late teens, you could have people in their early 20s. We just don't know more about this quote-unquote group yet, other than it appears that five individuals have been arrested by the FBI on this.
Do we believe these bad actors were domestic, or was there an overseas influence, or do we know yet?
We don't know. It appears that they're domestic in the sense that they were based in Cincinnati and other locations, but we don't know any more about it, about them. It appears that they were communicating on one of the apps, like a Signal app, so that they were trying to keep their conversations covert. That's what the arrests, I believe, were made on. And right now there are other warrants being served to identify other conversations and get more intelligence, more evidence in this case.
So, Rich, as far as we know, and again, details are just coming in this morning, so some of them actually went to Virginia, and so it was busted up by the FBI before they had a chance to act?
Correct. Yeah, the FBI was able to stop this. And in fact, we are hearing that the Secret Service actually did know, again, because it was a joint Secret Service case, that they were aware of the conspiracy ahead of time and that they had taken actions to make the event safe and to also notify others that this was taking place and that basically be on the lookout. In other words, it could have been even that they put out names and pictures of people so that if they were observed in the area, that they would have been arrested. So this was a well-coordinated, it appears to be a well-coordinated response and investigation to what could have been a very horrific attack if it came true.
Rich, you're a former member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New York City, so you've faced terror at the highest level. In a day and age where sometimes we don't know what to believe as a conspiracy, did it really happen? Your read on this, does it all seem legit?
It seems that there was definitely something going on. Well, let me change my. It appears that something was going on. In my opinion, it appears if I was an FBI agent and I had this information, it would be something that we would be running on immediately to identify any and all conspirators and, use sophisticated techniques, which appears that they did, to identify who's talking to who, what they're talking about. Do they have the capacity to actually do what they're saying? And are they taking any overt steps? So far, we have a lot of that information, but we don't have it all. We don't know about the explosives, and we don't know if they actually put together the drones with explosives on them. If they did that, then we've got a real terrorist activity. So that's what I'm still waiting for to determine. Was this purely conspiratorial, or was it a active, you know, terrorist plot that was going to take place within days of when the FBI found out about it?
Rich Frankel, former FBI special agent in charge in New York City, member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. We appreciate your expertise. Thank you for coming on this morning.
Here's more analysis from the Mark Cox Show in St. Louis.
Todd Byrow, host of Fox and Friends First. Todd, how are you? How about this tweet this morning from Kash Patel that they foiled a terrorist plot this weekend at the America 250 fight?
It's weird when, you know, it's been reported since that Secret Service was involved with it. This is terrifying. You know, we obviously want to find out the names of the people involved, because oftentimes the names may or may not give sort of key biographical information. But beyond the names, we want to dig deep into these people's background. Why did they do this? And, you know, what was their level of sophistication in getting caught? Because you worry that there could be a time where there's going to be a crew that doesn't get caught. And that's absolutely terrifying. And, of course, the goal is always to, you know, inflict terror, get us to not do these things, because this is capitalism. And if you read the article, you know, these people were anti-capitalist. They didn't like the capitalist society. And but capitalism is what makes this country great, and what allows us to have big events like this. So frightening stuff.
And these types of events are so cool. I've only watched clips of the UFC fight at the White House, but it looked really neat. But man, the security, I don't know if you know anyone who went, Todd, in person, but I can only imagine how tight security was, given how many attempts there have been on Donald Trump's life.
Yeah, but that was the thing. Like, they were going to create so much chaos that, you know, it wasn't the White House where they were going to strike. They were going to strike the buildings around, create chaos, pick people off with sniper fire. And then with all the surrounding, you know, insanity, they would then have a second team to go storm the White House with, you know, people distracted. So, but terrifying.
Yeah, the chaos,
absolutely terrifying.
The chaos seems to work, because if you look at the last couple of threats, we had the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and you had a guy that just basically tried to speed run into the ballroom, and it caught the guards off guard, essentially. They're like, "What?" The flash came through. Luckily, they stopped him. And then you think about other times where the president's been taken away, and it seems like there's a little bit of confusion and chaos before they kind of get their bearings and get the president out. It's unfortunate that we've seen so many examples of this happening. I wonder, too, when they say there's a certain cause of why they're doing this, and we've seen so many of these anti-Israel causes, these pro-Palestine groups coming forward and trying to commit things very similar to this in other states. We got to realize very quickly, our European friends over there are dealing with this, and it's gotten so far out of control. We got to squash this.
So the question is, how? And, you know, the FBI has their tactics that they utilize. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the overall what inspires people to do this. And so what is that balance of, you know, making sure we Americans can live our lives loud and proud and in all our, you know, some people say obnoxiousness. I say America. But, you know, how do we do that? How do we live our rights as Americans? To be the way we are, to celebrate the way we celebrate, to party the way we party, to earn a living the way we earn a living, and not have people attack us for it, both external and, of course, internal. That's the question. And, you know, I always go to the schools. You know, you can't have things where people who are successful are the bad guys in cartoons and schools. It seems trite, but this all adds up to something. And, you know, we get to situations like we have today. Also, to your point, close the freaking borders. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to come to this country, go through the long protracted thing that all of our ancestors did, because that is how you become American, not by waltzing over during the Biden administration.
You know, Ryan brought up the White House Correspondents' Dinner back in April with that shooting, and I saw that they've rescheduled it for July 24th. Are you going? What's the general sentiment among members of the press? Are they interested in attending that?
I have not been asked to return. I wonder if it's going to be a tiny footprint. But honestly, for a plethora of reasons, I don't want to. Like, it's okay when it's in April. This is really more of a scheduling thing than a national security thing for me. I don't do anything on weekends in the summer. We get 2 months of enjoyment in the Northeast. I take those 2 months and I enjoy my time in the Northeast. I'm not going down to D.C. on a Friday, ruining my Saturday because I'm not going to have to fly. No, I'm not doing that. I did it once in April. If we do this thing again in April next year, I'll go down. But no, you don't mess with somebody's weekend summers who grew up in Jersey. You just don't do it.
But you think there's those fear? You think that there's fear from people who went who would say, I'm not even trying to. I mean, I know security will be tighter, I'm sure. But do you think that there's this general sentiment of people saying, that's just, I have trauma or whatever, I'm not doing that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, that's the real answer you're looking for, not my Jersey.
No, I loved Jersey your answer, Todd. It was great.
I certainly thought about it. I will say this. My wife and I have determined, last year she went, we're not going together again. We're going to divide and conquer. God forbid something happens, which is unfortunate because, I get invited to a lot of cool things that I'd like to take my wife to. When I strut around, everybody brings their wives and stuff. But this is an important decision that we have made as a couple. And there are more important things than, hanging out in a ball gown. You know what I mean? So
I get it.
But we got to do what you got to do. We got kids, Without kids, maybe it's different.
I don't know. I'm 100% with you. I have a certain allotment of inconvenience in my life. And then when someone asks me to go above and beyond that inconvenience, especially when I'm looking forward to having maybe my weekends to myself, it's a hard no for me. Mm-hmm. It's easy. I could say that. Listen, this is my time. My inconvenience meter is running high right now. I need to lower that thing before I go and add anything else.
Can I leave? I know you got to go. Can I leave you with this? I made a decision on the inconvenience meter to benefit you, and I was going to potentially cancel on the Mark Cox Morning Show so that I could talk to J.D. Vance, but it's insanity down there. I don't want anything. It's too inconvenient for me. So I said, you know what? I'm going to fulfill my obligations, my unpaid obligations to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
You do it.
Even with the fill-in host, and I did it, and there you go. I deserve the intro that you played. I'm even better than that intro.
Oh, gosh, Todd.
Todd Fyro, host of Fox and Friends First. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Speaking of security, World Cup matches are getting the white glove treatment. Here's KRLD in Dallas with more.
Game one of 9 World Cup matches in Arlington went smoothly, but there will be no break for law enforcement as we look ahead to Wednesday.
Sunday's match saw federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies provide Super Bowl-level protection around the stadium. That included counter-drone teams prepared to intercept or take down unauthorized drones entering restricted airspace. There was no reports of any. One drone did accidentally drift into restricted airspace at the Fan Fest event at Fair Park. Dallas FBI Special Agent in Charge Joseph Rothrock says because of the scale of the World Cup, security is complex.
For us, from a federal government's perspective, from a federal law enforcement perspective, you are stressing law enforcement to the absolute max.
Federal officials continue to say they're not aware of any credible threats against the World Cup events in Dallas or in any other city. But security will continue to stay heightened. KRLD.
We got some details on a possible scam involving World Cup tickets.
World Cup fans who bought their tickets online through websites such as StubHub and SeatGeek say they were scammed. More than a dozen people were waiting in line in front of the Atlanta Stadium before the Cape Verde and Spain match, unable to pull up the ticket barcodes. One man spent over $1,400 on tickets almost 6 months ago for his wife and two daughters.
And they sent me on a seat number and everything, and then after I tried to reach out on a barcode, and I could not get it.
Veena Ramroop bought tickets for her grandson's 13th birthday and was also denied entry.
He's just so excited to attend a game, and I thought it was a perfect gift for him at the time, and now that's it. I have to look at his face, and I'm heartbroken.
Moving on to education, cuts in funding have some concerned we'll miss out on scientific breakthroughs when we need them the most. Here's KCBS.
Some of the biggest breakthroughs in modern medicine and technology began with basic research at America's universities. But leading institutions are warning that federal cuts are threatening that work. Sally Kornbluth, the president of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. Dr. Kornbluth, it's a pleasure to have you on today.
Some of the biggest breakthroughs we enjoy in modern life, whether it be medical advances or new devices or new technologies or national security, they all derived originally from research at universities by people who just wanted to understand how things work.
So perhaps they're not setting out with one specific goal, be it, I don't know, curing Alzheimer's or cancer or whatever. They're just trying to learn more, and then those discoveries lead to the bigger breakthroughs?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of my favorite examples is immunotherapy for cancer. You know, we all know people who have cancers that were once a death sentence that are now treatable by approaches like immunotherapy that came from decades and decades of scientists trying to understand how the immune system works so that it could be harnessed to attack cancer. But without those decades of fundamental understanding, you couldn't just decide to find a way to have the immune system attack cancers. You had to understand it first.
You are the president of MIT, a major research university. I wonder, how concerned are you about cuts in federal investments in basic research? How devastating could it be to future discoveries?
I'm incredibly concerned about it. I mean, look, if we stopped the pipeline of basic science discoveries that happens at universities like MIT, if we stopped them today, you might not feel it tomorrow. You might not even feel it in 5 or 10 years, but I'll tell you, you will feel it eventually, and your children will feel it, and their children, children's children, in terms of the things that could have been invented that were not. You won't see the new treatments for cancer, the new treatments for Alzheimer's. You won't see the new devices and technologies that make the world better if the pipeline goes dry.
I mean, we should point out, this is not just an MIT problem. Here in the Bay Area, at Stanford, at Cal Berkeley, at UCSF, I think leaders are facing the same issues.
100%. Absolutely. Some of the world's premier research institutions are in California, and they are suffering the same as MIT. Their scientists are worried about funding, and they're worried about how they're going to keep their research enterprises robust and vital.
Now, this is part of an effort called Curiosity on a Mission. What can you tell us about that, and how can our listeners find out more about it?
Yeah, so, you know, we all understand the curiosity. Even little children understand curiosity, how you find out how things work. But we're not just looking for things just for our own entertainment or even just to understand. We have in mind the fact that these things will be aggregated and eventually will lead to the kind of inventions that make life better. So Curiosity on a Mission aims to show what science is at its heart. Unrelenting pursuit of curiosity. It tells the story of the peoples behind the discoveries, the people who ask questions not knowing where it might lead. And so we started a website called curiositymission.org to learn more, all kinds of interesting stories there. And then you can find out more about MIT itself at understanding.mit.edu, including a video on how science has made America what it is over the last 250 years.
Climate change is something people are studying at universities, but it's not something they can sue over. Why is that? Here's more from Tommy Tucker at WWL in New Orleans.
Talking to Mark Davis, director, a professor of environmental law at Tulane Law School of Louisiana, and a law that Governor Landry recently signed to ban people from suing oil and gas companies over climate change. Let's talk about what the bill says, and then we'll talk about the justification for it, et cetera.
Sure. Well, the bill basically says nobody can sue anyone in the energy industry or any other pollution emitter for damages caused that they may attribute to climate change, which, of course, it's a hard thing to prove in any event. Mm-hmm. Largely, I think, in reaction to a lawsuit filed by Boulder, Colorado, Boulder County, saying under state law that, you know, they may have rights of recovery. That case is still in the courts. In fact, it's going to be heard by the Supreme Court. But nobody's successfully brought one of these suits. And even if you bring a suit, you have to successfully win it. So this is kind of, a preemptive effort to, stay out of court.
How rare is it to have a law that says, no, you can't even file a suit over this?
It's rare, but it's, you know, it does happen, and we see more of these bills filed. And a bill that came through this legislature to allow the aerospace industry to come in. You know, you may have heard that there's a, you know, possibility of a rocket launching facility in Southwest Louisiana, and you know, there was a bill that said, well, if you're in the aerospace industry and you launch rockets and the like, well, your neighbors, you know, they can't sue you for a nuisance or trespass or anything like that. So that means you used to maybe go to court and find out if you could win, mm-hmm. but you can't go to court. So, you know, and you're basically rejiggering the rights and responsibilities. Some people have a right to go to court and other people won't.
What happened in Boulder, Colorado?
The county government there, you know, brought an action saying that you are contributing to climate change and it's hurting us here in Boulder. You know, if you look at Boulder, I mean, it's a place that's, they have air pollution problems, they have water availability problems, they have a whole bunch of problems. Whether any of those are attributable to climate change and any of that is attributable to the action of the people they sued, that's a different question and I can't answer it. Basically, you know, when bad things happen, people look for someone to share the pain with, if you will. And that's, you know, whether you win or lose, that's what courts are for. But increasingly, we're now, you know, seeing efforts, well, we don't want you to be in court. So if you can immunize yourself or limit the rights and responsibilities of, you know, of the parties, then, you know, evidence and proof won't matter because you don't have a cause of action.
Does the Constitution say anything about any of this?
It might, but we don't know yet. I mean, at some point, if you are, you know, denying people fundamental rights without, you know, a clear, reasonable purpose, it might be a reach too far. I mean, in the bill that we started with, you know, here, it actually, the bill says the legislature agrees that the federal law preempts state law. Well, that hasn't been decided yet. So there's litigation going on. Bills like this are designed to prevent further litigation.
Meant to shut it down.
Yeah, and to shut other people's, you know, opportunity to go to court down. I want to be real clear. These cases, you know, there aren't very many of them being brought. They're really hard to prove, and they're expensive. In many ways, this is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist yet.
Expensive for the plaintiff or the defendant? Because the defendant
should be expensive for both.
Okay,
but because you don't get paid until the end, at least if you're the plaintiff,
right?
Defense lawyers tend to get paid all the way along.
And they're on the staff anyway, right? In a lot of ways.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if there's a lawyer out there who, you know, benefits from going to court, it tends to be the defense lawyer because, you know, they're not on a contingent fee. They're being paid, you know, on a retainer and by the hour. You know, the notion that there's jackpot justice out there isn't quite what people imagine it to be.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.